it is.
You got one more turn.
Hello.
I couldn't make it, so I'm here.
Okay.
So, should we open the meeting up and do you want people's names for the recording or not?
That's okay.
Okay. Any other announcements or anything like that that's come up?
So I wanted to say that members of the committee are interested in the county parks.
Oh, yes, good. Actually, I forgot that meeting.
Plan, and it is, the county's draft plan is on the county parks website right now. If people want to review it, take a look. At least considers the topics that we're looking at here, endangered species and habitat, critical areas. You know, they address them all in there. And
okay.
I'd like you folks to take a look and see if you got any feedback.
When
are it's on a different track than the actual county comprehensive plan, because the parks plan expires sooner and they need to have it current for funding. And I think it's on a March or April approval. But I've got Chris, you can send that to everybody. That's a link to it in the red.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
It's supposed to be blue.
So when are you trying to pull comments in? Where is it going next after this?
It is on its way to the county council.
Okay. So you've got another couple of weeks before it does that?
Yeah. And I do think, I'm not sure when the cutoff is, but certainly I think I'm still going to the council for approval for the comment.
Okay. Any other announcements or anything?
None.
Okay.
Not that I was going to be a short time.
Oh, that's all right. Well, it's great to have you. It's really important to have a representative from the tribes for sure. And agenda review, is there anything else on the agenda that you'd like to add? Chris put this together and sent it out to Vicki and myself, and we didn't see anything.
Yeah, I guess for today, I printed out the habitat conservation area section of the critical areas ordinance.
You passed that out, signing sheet,
got it. I did not bring any shoreline management program data. I have the GIS files that we can look at if you'd like, but I guess for today, I'm just going to look at the CAO update. As I go through this existing ecosystem report, I think I need to shrink it down into more bite-sized pieces. So I kind of want to just talk maybe more about habitat today in general, habitat classifications, what Department of Fish and Wildlife has, what we have in the critical areas ordinance, where those line up, where they don't line up, what's missing.
Did you add that down below under the agenda, or you just?
Well, I think I'm kind of just, where we have reviewed current draft of existing ecosystem. I think just wanted to kind of highlight the habitat piece of that as it regards to the ordinances. And one of our natural resource planners should be coming in shortly today. And just to let everyone know kind of when a permit comes into the county, how they would do it.
That's great.
Currently based on wildlife and considerations.
Who's that going to be, Chris?
Aaron Page. And yeah, I guess one other piece that I have noted, I was emailing Finner a little bit earlier this week, just about the Chuckanut Wildlife Corridor. So I guess I wanted to maybe talk a little bit more about classification as a biodiversity corridor and the Chuckanut one in particular, and what backs it up or what doesn't back it up. And
I guess one thing I had was, and I don't necessarily know how it ties directly into what was going on here, but I did attend the Department of Natural Resources Recreation Plan for that.
Oh, great.
Kind of the North Fork area out there, and I don't know if you went or.
I didn't. I forgot.
Pretty interesting.
Did you go to the Bellingham one or the?
I went to the Bellingham one. Yeah.
I heard it was well attended.
Yeah, there were hundreds of people there.
Oh my
sure.
God!
Really?
Yeah, from all over the spectrum. You had like your backcountry horseman people, your off-road vehicle people, and your mountain biking people.
Right.
There's some mixing and some clashing among all that.
And this was the county recreational...
That was the Department of Natural Resources.
DNR.
Their recreation plan. It sounds like it's kind of just in the beginning stages of, you know, soliciting public comment and things like that. And, but they gave a map, and it's on their website. They have a map of all their managed land and kind of some of the key areas that they plan on targeting for potential recreation opportunity. And the interesting thing that I heard was just that off-road vehicle access is definitely a big part of what they think they want to be doing up there.
That really has huge ramifications.
It's interesting because I think like that's been a big battle for people out in the North Fork area to try to prevent that from happening. I know that talking to my neighbors, there's been like, you know, litigation and stuff in the past about specifically that, but it seems like they're still going forward with it.
Those are huge.
Interesting.
I don't know. I even doubt how to describe it. It's huge assessments that are not really very comprehensive when you're putting those plans together. Mm-hmm. I've been involved in reviewing a lot of the Forest Service's ORV plans, and sometimes it's just like, God darn, you know, aren't you supposed to do impact analysis of these things?
Yeah. Well, I just think it's a good thing for us to keep a pulse on, just because, you know, I don't know, because of the time, you know, our parallel stuff we're doing here, and that will definitely impact wildlife in that area.
When's the next movement on that?
On their website, there's a timeline of I don't remember the exact dates, but there's a detailed specific, you know, public comment ends at some point, and then they start moving at a different date. It's pretty well laid out on their website, on the Department of Natural Resources website.
So do they come to, how do they work with the counties when they're doing those kind of regional plans? Do they turn around and then go through the counties?
So I got a call the next day after that from the regional director, from the head of the Bellingham Herald's hunting and Doug Huddle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fishing and hunting and watchable wildlife is not included in any of the discussion. Or
That's the one thing I took issue with too. Is just they kind of had a sort of a roundtable discussion where after they did this sort of general public information speech, you could go around and speak to employees of the Department of Natural Resources individually and kind of ask them. But nowhere on their list of recreation activities, you know, they included off-road vehicle stuff, mountain biking, hiking, horse stuff, nothing, it said nothing of hunting or fishing, I don't even know if it had hiking on there. It may have, but it didn't have anything to do with hunting and fishing. When I asked, because that's sort of my area,
mm-hmm.
Of interest as far as recreation goes, they kind of just said, well, that's just a given, that there will always be hunting access, it will always be available. My response is like, well, I'd love to see it on the list,
yeah.
You know, if it is a given.
That's kind of scary, you're saying it's a blanket given that even right now the access we do report is because one of the reasons you've got some pretty good healthy birds up there is because they don't have good access to vehicles.
Right.
People hiking in or using.
Yeah.
But, you know, not the fact that you start adding more, you have a lot more access.
Right, yeah. As soon as you open those gates up, yeah, people are getting in much further.
And the ORV people were a large faction of them.
They're extremely well organized.
They are, yeah. And they've been pushing for this kind of thing for somebody mentioned 30 years now. And so, you know, they've been pushed back, and I think now they're kind of come to a boiling point. And there's a lot of, right now with the way mountain bike technology has advanced too, there's a lot of crossover from the off-road vehicle crowd to the mountain biking community.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some partnership there, so that it's an even bigger push to get stuff like that going.
Does the state have a green sticker fund when you buy an ORV? Do you have to put that money into a pot? Because that money is often
technically exploited. You're supposed to register your off-road vehicle as well. I don't know if there's a green sticker thing. I mean, I don't know where that money goes. But
it became a nice...
Yes,
it was.
Yeah.
Are those huge pots?
Distribution.
Right.
Access.
Yeah, I know. There's definitely more of those off-road vehicle accessible stuff out there in the eastern part of the state.
Yeah, sure. Coming
from Okay. Those are huge pots sometimes. And there was one overlaid over a research facility I took care of for UC Berkeley, a 15-square-mile area in the Sierras. And the point that the groups kept making is saying, well, this will control the RVs more. And it was never identified. You know, there are people casually doing it on Forest Service roads and stuff up there. But it was never laid out as an RV recreation area. And they said, well, no, you don't understand. This will put them into specific routes. Well, that never happened.
No, that's their argument, too.
Right.
I mean, they specifically said that, you know, they're having a lot of trouble with, or they've had in the past trouble with illegal trail building and people complaining that, you know, there are off-road vehicles on those logging roads and stuff. And their idea, I guess, was to, you know, if they can control and if they can designate certain areas, then they'll have a lot more control and be able to manage it properly. But
they have, like, one officer for that whole area right now, don't they?
I'm not sure, yeah.
I think there is. He said he covers a huge area. Isn't that the case?
Yeah. So enforcement is super low on National Forest and DNR lands.
Right.
There's just too much land, not enough money, not enough
walking. DC's got the same land.
It's a problem because there is, but then once the signs go up, it really does, there was a huge draw of people into this area. I mean, it was unregulated before, but it was never a problem for us. And we were doing fish and wildlife studies, we were all based in this. It had a huge effect, completely changed the wintertime populations and everything. And
they got a valuable source of information.
We do, there's lots of papers that have come out of that watershed, and it's changed it completely. Because they'll go, you know, it's a big open landscape. They don't care where the signs are.
Can't get the top part.
And then, I guess the only other thing I had to add to that was just I thought it was interesting that there were two direct questions. I think Frank was there, and he directly addressed them, saying, like, what kind of contact have you had with the tribe so far, and what have you had contact with the Department of Fish and Wildlife? And they're like, oh, we're working very closely with both of those people.
Yeah. They said the same about Connie Parks. That wasn't the case. And all they did was send us an invitation to the meeting.
Wow.
So something to keep an eye on anyway. It's definitely one of those areas we identified as potential critical habitat stuff. So
those uses just keep coming, and that's what the complexity of these landscapes, just like how in the hell, like Frank's point, and how do we even begin to understand what's next 10 years or next 20 years as these multiple things keep laying onto these areas, and without, I don't even know how to begin to set areas aside that are critical areas, even if nobody is enforcing those areas. But anyway, those are good points. What should we do, Chris? How should we incorporate that into the narrative that these things are happening? And
I don't know. I mean, I would kind of defer that to experts, I think, as far as what to do with that information. But I'm certainly going to keep an eye on it and talk to my neighbors about it and see what they have to say about it.
Certainly, with your experience, that you can say that the impacts are very real and need to be considered.
Yeah, we could cite. I mean, we have there's all kinds of paper. I mean, that was work going on. So they had huge baseline studies, and then when these projects started. From this, in California, there's this green sticker fund, so if you license an RV, you have to buy this. And that goes right into these recreational pots. And they're unstoppable because of the amount of money in the Forest Service is. Yeah, so there are. I'll try to pull up the critical papers and start see if we can circulate them. At least have those cited in our literature cited section. And they'll document the before and after of that use. But the use increased 10 to 20 fold. There were groups coming in now on an area that was unidentified. Now there were groups coming in from Las Vegas, clear up to north of Lake Tahoe and everywhere. The parking lots were all, within 10 years, are all under capacity, even though they were huge parking lots. So it's like, holy crap. And it totally took the character of the research area away. In fact, Berkeley hardly uses it. It's really stepped back now.
There are several. Maybe 30 years ago, 5 months, 7 years ago, heights. So, what do you think you want?
Oh, they're impossible.
People were just hiking and going to National Recreation. Didn't have anything like that for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like,
a lot of these are
surprised they got all the money.
Yeah.
In the 70s, it was Van Zandt Dyke that was proposed for the RV park.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm, yeah, because I, you know, Michael Savacci? Oh, okay, yeah, he's a neighbor of mine. Yeah, I think he was pretty involved when that happened back then. Yeah, he was surprised if it was on the table again, because he thought that was over.
He was good.
Yeah, next generation.
So that's definitely something we should
do. Yeah. Do we have any other things on the agenda review? Do any public comment? I guess we don't have anybody from the public here. No public comment.
I guess just something to kind of tag along with the DNR recreation plan. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The Malbec-Arizona Snoqualmie National Forest is going to be rolling out some changes, proposed changes to their road maintenance plan. And it's very along these same kind of lines about what areas are going to be open, what areas are going to be closed, based on the road money that they have available. That should be coming public in 2 or 3 weeks for comment.
And that will be on their website? Or
I believe it should be on their website, yeah.
Who's that? National
Forest.
Forest, okay.
Yeah. But that's half the county. So.
Yeah.
That's National Forest and National Forest.
I think it's Jeff National Forest. Yeah, U.S. Forest Service.
And do you know how long the comment period is? It like
I do not know how long the comment period is.
And is this the draft DNR, or what are they doing?
It is. I guess I don't know exactly what.
They just recently had the public hearings, didn't they? So I would think they don't have.
So it's just the scoping.
So I heard a presentation by one of their fish bios about roadway systems that they still have that are a threat to the aquatic resource. And he went through this presentation and basically they did an analysis of their roadway systems to identify where there was existing infrastructure, crossing streams on abandoned roads and that were no longer used, mm-hmm. and basically what the risk was of those roadways failing washed down the streams. So in combination with that, they are having an issue with their funding levels in order to keep their roads passable and safe, I guess. And so they are developing, they had a team go out and make some recommendations. And I believe that's maybe what you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, they were really public meetings, but it was more like they were telling them what they were doing more than they were soliciting info from
right. And so it's kind of, they kind of came up with their own plan, but then it has to go through the district ranger, and I believe she is kind of going in her own direction. Right. They're actually closing a lot of rooms.
But not necessarily stabilizing or going into spending any money before.
They're reducing their roadway system, their open roadway system, to match their available funding. is the idea.
But they will be commission and have to deal with these other that possible failing.
That, to my understanding, that requires additional money. So this is just something kind of along the lines of access and, you know, wild lands and.
So just for my inexpert brain, to you experts, what does that mean in terms of like abandoned road systems? Is that a good thing or a bad thing for wildlife? Like I'm thinking that's a good thing, right? Because you're not getting access.
It could be. It just depends. If they don't have the funds to decommission them, then they're not restoring slopes or pulling the drains out.
Culverts.
Yeah.
Culverts.
Culverts and things like that become a problem.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Once they abandon it and they leave the culverts in, now they're not being maintained.
Right, so they can get blocked up and you can get flooding.
Yep.
And,
blowouts.
And the issue kind of becomes that if you don't appropriately decommission the roadway starting at the end and working your way in, then if you have a blowout at the beginning of the roadway, well, then there's no way to access it.
Right.
You know, and you've got to reconstruct road to get out there to the end to then decommission, which doesn't make a lot of financial sense.
No.
So,
interesting.
That would be a great thing, again, to add it to the tax in those
years.
There's
so many miles.
There's a lot.
I mean, I think what they can maintain is a third or a quarter of what they've got out there or something. It's really, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the decommissioning, like you say, it would be a very costly thing. And that money, will they ever get it?
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
And even though these are on federal lands, those roads tend to be in the lower part of those federal watersheds, so they immediately impact county resources, too, if they're blown out.
Yeah, just because, yeah, exactly.
Well, they, on those programs, when they have the funds, they spend the money on converting the abandoned roadways into ORV trails. And their point is, well, then they are being maintained. And it turns out when you really find out, well, what's maintained, well, the ORV groups offer to do maintenance and they never do them. You know, they might do one or two show pieces and then they leave the rest of them unmaintained. And the agency's now walked away saying, well, it's not our fault, it's the ORV groups that they take on. It's like, shoot. Yeah. Okay, do you want to get into the, any other comment on that?
Frogs are
cooking. They're laying their eggs already. Yeah, they're laying already.
Wow. That's exciting.
Right. Yeah. Although I don't know if it's good news. It's early.
Oh yeah.
All right.
We were just going over additions to the agenda and things. And we don't have anything hot to add at the beginning, do you?
No.
Okay. Chris, do you want to go into number four then?
Sure. I guess I'm still extremely overwhelmed by how complex all this is. So, you know, as far as where I'm at, I'm still just trying to get my head around everything. Appreciate all you guys being patient and helping work through it. So I guess, you know, and I kind of mentioned a second ago, but I think with this actual report, it's going to be helpful just to cut it down into more bite-sized pieces, both for writing it and just for making sure we kind of capture a piece at a time. So I'm open to go wherever we want to go, but I was...
No, I apologize. I said I was going to try to get on it and work on it last time, and I didn't, and I'll try to do it now this time, because at least start editing, read through, and helping you suggest areas that could be blocked out or something like that.
Yeah.
Likewise. Got through the environmental chapter, as a plan, the guidelines, and those things, it's a lot of stuff.
There's a lot in here, and I mean, I think... you know, of course, the committee is scheduled to sunset in July. I'm hoping that we can get an extension and kind of make sure we do this right and actually have some solid recommendations and a solid document that's actually helpful to the county. So I guess just on the habitat piece, and I've been trying to print it out. Hopefully everyone got a copy of this is the current draft of the Article 7 of the Critical Areas Ordinance, which has the habitat conservation areas. So on the one hand, we have the areas that are identified through the critical areas, which we can look at in a sec. But I'm realizing that is different than habitat types. So looking at our big, our wildlife significant areas, she's got how many different types of habitat classifications here. Looks like. Yeah, the Fenwick scenes, I believe. But she's got 29 different habitat types.
For habitat types or locations? Habitat types?
So, you know, a lot of this, I would appreciate feedback on whether the habitat types that Ann has written up are appropriate. Are we missing anything here? Should we? You know, in trying to write this report, do we want to actually write down every distinct habitat type and try to offer descriptions so people know what we're talking about or what we have here. And actually, I can bring this up. The description of all these habitat types.
Habitat types and features.
Have you ever added things in your notes or anything like that when you're working on these lists? Or
well, I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of systems that are out there that you could dissect it down even much smaller, but I don't think that's appropriate for what this report would be requiring in our analysis.
Do we want to just say that this should be examined or see if it continues to reflect the county or something?
So here we go. Yeah, actually, we
could.
See, what was the one you guys just said about the beginning?
Mud descriptions there.
Mud plants, the same as the eelgrass fez, aren't they?
Well, they break, it depends on how she lumped them.
Two.
Green habitats here, yeah.
Here we go.
It's not that you're going to have to use it, really. How would you use it?
Right.
I think, why would you use something that's already pretty much spot on?
Just cite that and
say. And it looks like it uses basis like the coordinate system for the wetland stuff, and it's on some basic accepted methodologies.
Can we say we reviewed it and it looked satisfactory to reflect the county's
story?
Okay. Is that what you're thinking, Chris?
Well, yeah, I mean, really just getting feedback on if this list is complete and those descriptions, I mean, I guess I'll go back through here and if we want to just straight up cut and paste what she has into our updated document, and maybe once we actually have it in our report, then
we can look
once
more
we do our final review, we can go back and make sure that it's complete.
Yeah, those probably have a change, unless it's just something omitted, is it right? I mean, it's
right, unless there's a habitat type.
Saltwater movement, water, that's all we're sure on. Some of those are further refined, like the water fish.
In the shoreline plan?
Yeah, as you said, those are actually the science right now.
Okay.
Places that are rock ledges that are indicated for rock fishes. Territorial is still there. Mm-hmm. I also found the boulder fields, sand ponds, just really out of like 300 feet.
Could those be added as kind of more like habitat features, sort of
have you guys
thing?
Addressed those additional rockfish habitats or when they came out? No, I guess it would be.
As far as.
These are kind of new or fine descriptions published in the literature?
Subcategories like saltwater, water, and some different types of different types that are specifically identified.
Yeah. Well, how about you put it in the report, Chris, and then we can look at that and then add in anything or make comment once it's in there?
CDOC Society. And then just really
so which one?
CDOC Society.
Okay. Are you saying CDOC?
CDOC, SEA.
Okay, right.
And they have their offices on Orvis Island. I can see that campus.
Staying away from the salmon.
Yeah. 16-foot high, whole wall of cold water and coral. I think up in the upper creek delta.
I read about that.
It's huge. So since the house is a thousand, it's kind of the wall. There's so much of something that are found in
That seems, I mean, that's within our preview, isn't it, under this
test? Yeah, and I don't want to get drawn to the bar office, of course.
Well, no, but if they're new, that seems reasonable to add.
Yeah, we need to make a reference to this.
Yeah. Do you know the where his papers are at, or is it on their website or something?
Yeah.
You got it.
You got it. Bringing it up right now.
Well, that's a nice finding for us. Whatever little things we're accomplishing.
It could come in like the special habitat feature or something.
Okay.
Some of those that could be plugged in.
As far as marine wildlife habitat, who is the authority on that? Is it NOAA that's doing all that work, or is it DFW, or who?
I know that we've got some rockfish stuff that we've done recently. I know that we have. I mean, we do a lot of forage fish survey because it's all related to kind of work that gets done in the intertidal.
So DFW would be the place for it. Okay.
I'm sure there's other resources.
Okay.
I think that we have a component that would cover a lot of the future.
Would NIMS be also? Is there one database that's being updated, or would it be all three independent or four independent?
I'm not sure about one database.
Okay.
It's like they're all individual databases. Which is the problem.
Yeah. Okay. I know that's the piece on this might be separate all those issues. I don't know if they actually put together some pretty good cases and models that are connected, at least on some of the physical characteristics of the occurrence and that sort of stuff. The biological side, I don't know.
That's okay.
Because that's what they all want to do. This video system.
I'm always having to go to the different services for the different information.
No clearinghouse. And he's on at Friday Harbor, did you say? Or an Orcas? Okay, good. Well, that's the kind of new stuff I think would be very appropriate. Is that data?
They wanted to put the pipe right through there. Probably even the pipe with a 60-foot sand dunes moving over and back and forth. It's really amazing stuff.
What, is the data accessible, or is it public data?
Yeah, it's at the University, or it's at actually a county. It's a county that has it, the ecology has it, too.
Okay.
There's videos, there's actually videos.
Oh, wow.
Analysis of what kind of critters are there.
And that was like part of their feasibility study or something like that, or environmental intensity. Oh, wow.
Tertius. Is it really?
Wow.
Well,
every
time you think
it's
okay, it's up out there, and then someone wants to put a fiber up.
So we need a 5-year period to complete this report.
Yeah.
We need a 5-year period to complete this report with all the.
That's true. But we're just looking at data.
Yep. No, that's right. How far out does our offshore go? Does it go on the other side of Lummi?
Oh, yeah.
It goes all the way out to the...
Yeah, I don't know.
It goes between Lummi and Cypress.
Okay.
You can kind of see the line on the map, just on the west side of Lummi.
Oh, yeah, okay, right. Is Point Roberts in the county?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. This is a little figure.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Give it to Canada.
Yeah, and it's offshore from Point Roberts, the county, I mean, the study line would be...
Is offshore of Point
Roberts. Right about the same distance, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, to the west.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any other marine mammal? I mean, I know the PHS covers like haul-outs for sea lions, but I guess even like the orca data, I guess for the most part they probably don't pass through the county line or barely do, but...
Well, they do along to, you know, Chair Point up in there, but there's no, to my memory, I've never seen orca anything other than haul out areas for seals or harvest seals. Yeah, I think there are points for that. Yeah, but nothing for whales, dolphins.
Absolutely.
Coming up on the PHS.
Oh, PHS?
Yeah, just the PHS. It's not, there's no polygons that say, you know, foraging area for orca or
who would be the
danger species.
Yeah.
Who would be the authority on orcas in the area? Who does all the tracking and monitoring of orcas?
The museum, the Orca Museum,
yeah.
Right, you know,
yeah.
By the harbor.
There's
I guess, I don't know. Are
orca
they,
network?
Are they bona fide or not, do you think?
Sure.
Questionable.
No, they're bona fide.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're real.
Do they give their data out pretty easily? Is it?
Oh yeah.
We don't have any. Is it the gray or the humpback whale that feed off of like Whidbey Island? Have you ever seen them feeding in the sand flats there where they turn? Are there any of those feeding sites up here? Are the gray?
No, not yet.
I don't know which would be in there.
Gray whale.
Gray. Okay.
But humpbacks are increasing.
Oh, they are, okay.
So
are
the, but they're more open water.
Yeah, it was gray then. Was that, I know that area was a designated on Whidbey Island. Is there any of those designated up here?
Well,
there's
gray whale coming in and feed on the bottom. Yeah,
okay. That's happened a few times, yeah. But no, there, I don't think
they're
dying
already from toxins. But,
there are huge feeding areas on these, where they go sideways in the mud flats. It's just incredible. But we don't have those in Whatcom County.
They do come in, but not in concentration.
Okay.
And it's usually a bad sign when they show up from Tallinn Bay.
They're lost.
They don't last. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
From from impacts or from just the toxicity?
That's the other thing. They
just die.
Do we have designated herring shoals or anything like that, or areas of the herring? Okay.
Cherry Point, yeah.
And those have
which I think does come up from PHS, at least the waterfowl foraging and that area. Feed on.
Okay. They used to, but that's been revised now.
The herring.
No,
that's still.
Yeah.
What was that, Chris? Did you say that?
The herring.
Oh, okay.
Polygon.
And that's still accurate then? You said it used to be, or that's the current status?
No, it used to be way farther than that.
There's two records.
That's just Cherry Point.
And there are two.
Oh, okay.
That's the holding area. So they, before they spawn, they just hang out there and wipe them.
But we aren't saying those areas are contracting or expanding or anything like that, or we don't have data.
I haven't seen that. I what's happening is actually the places where when they come in, then they can fall at the bottom and something like that. Actually, a particular trench at Cherry Point.
Wow.
And they go in, and then they spread, scatter all over, and start spawning on where it
was. Okay.
Mostly macroalgae. And so the areas they spawn is actually shrunk down to just a few places now on Birch Bay, and Birch Bay, with White Point, and also by just north of the Arco Valley.
And the drawings now reflect the smaller areas, or the
that, that one doesn't, but the ones that the new unit put up here.
Oh.
See the degrees of this area.
Do we want to somehow
cite that?
Okay.
Yeah, but it just illustrates the PHS polygon. They come from many ages.
They come from what?
The many, I mean, some of them are old. They haven't been updated with current.
But we have data suggests that they're shrinking. That those
for the herring.
Populations.
Yeah.
They used to be the biggest herring population in the entire state. Now, over half the herring is one turkey in the top, which is genetically unique. It's a real late spawner. Supposedly earlier than the herring.
It should be amazing watching all the birds out there.
Yeah, and
it's just like
25,000 scolders.
Yeah.
And now you're not seeing anything like that.
Nothing like that.
Yeah.
So it's shrunk not only in abundance, but also in food structure. So you're not getting these older fish that are just pushing up and up there.
Right.
And so that dual signature is a conundrum.
Get like 2 year, 3 year old fish coming down. Nobody really knows for sure where they're out there. It's from anecdotal information. It's thought that this particular species, your sunspot goes off, goes as a growing, but the example is going to go off the coast of the dry. Feed on a kind of flowing productive area and come back so there's a bunch of different theories we want. But first of all, no one's really actually
done
proven that you go up there.
Okay.
So who's our find a lot of these colors.
Who's our best citation on that for
this?
Okay. Okay.
There's a ton of
them. Okay.
I've asked two state studies on that, so.
We don't, this problem, you know, this comes back to what, when those areas have shrunk, what do we say? Do we say these areas have shrunk, so therefore the polygons should be revised, or do we say leave the polygons big?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was wanting to find real historical information. Because, I think they just say that the habitat, there's still 38 miles of the habitat. Still there, but the fish aren't losing. So they could use it again. Or, as Canadians said, these fish were studied to be the DSA listed.
Yeah.
And then the feds came into this study and said, no, we don't think there's much. Because we think that they'll use the area as another herring in there. But, that's not the case. It has not happened. So it's like,
is that right?
So we all feel at the state level that this is that we need to stop not only to Washington State but also to British Columbia.
Okay.
We need to be timing the way they produce and stuff. I always keep the whole thing is habitat area. What's what we use is not. So then you start thinking, okay, what other species would you use that same argument with? Grizzly bears?
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what it points out to me is what happens when you're a county staff person sitting at the intake, sitting there, and you've got an applicant coming in wanting to put a dock in or a bulkhead or something. What kind of information are we requiring of that applicant in the CAO? You know, do we use PHS data? Do we require them to look beyond that to something else? Can we help provide some guidance as to what the limit is that they should be using? For the middle of information, you know, best available science, is there some way we can provide a database or some kind of link to more comprehensive information for people?
Yeah, I think so. There's been a lot of really good work done by resources committees looking at what beaches have, like marine size, elevation, exposure,
right.
Shading, or search analysis. sampling system is a little bit different. You know, even that, there's a good case, because even with those two species, you know, you have a storm and it changes where all the fine materials are. So then when the fish come in the spawn, they're not going to spawn where they spawned last time.
Where it is, right, yeah.
So, you know, keep moving back and forth.
Yeah.
Even the field grass at Cherry Point has moved up and down the coast periodically, responding to the basic slumps from the bluff and then double up and find materials.
Right.
So how do we put that into effect to avoid counter mistakes and things like that when, you know, it's so hard.
It's been historically found there, and there's nothing that's really changed in the system. I'd say
but if, well, let's say somebody is putting a dock in here, and it doesn't come up on the map, but, you know, in reality it should have. So that becomes a problem at the county. It's not getting red flagged, but then they start the project, somebody complains, somebody looks into it, and it's really expensive. Do we provide, you know, is it possible for the county, and if there's a risk for that, is to start to develop a more comprehensive database for information for people to link to that newest and best available plan? To help not only count your own staff, but also consultants or the applicants themselves in trying to hone in. If you know you're close and you know what's described sitting in that yellow polygon along the water, is the same as what you're sitting and seeing over here. It should be a kind of a red flag that, you know, I should look beyond this and not just write it off.
Right now, if an applicant came in and it was the wrong season, would that permit be pushed ahead? If their consultant said, well, there's nothing in there now, but it's
good.
Actually, okay. And that's what I remember running into a lot of lower
pieces.
That's one of the big problems. It's like, yeah, look at Snake Lake wetlands. Well,
out
in the
middle
of summer,
you can
see
some wetlands.
Right.
And that's
a survey, but it's
not
good time.
That's a
common
theory, right?
So that's been used as a factor in that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why I say I would refer to a historic magician and then use some signature indicator somewhere for a search model.
Actually, it gets even more difficult once you like surf snow. People are finding that with climate change, the areas without shade from trees heating up. And so the suitable areas have a combination of the right beach characteristics, but also the adjacent forest. So that could mean some areas are on that map are particularly important, or that there may be a shift, so that areas that weren't as important now become more important because they have this other requisite requirement. So that makes it even more difficult. The other thing I would strongly echo what Barry's talking about, those three forage fish that have been launched. If we only protect what's being used now, we basically cement in a decline.
That seems like one of the key things in this entire report is, yeah, especially right now, if everything's in flux, and it doesn't mean that things are easy, or that the species are going away. It just means that everything's moving around, and a counterperson can't rely on those polygons. It's almost, it always used to bother me when we had polygons on the map, because then it said, well, it's outside the polygon, therefore it's okay. And it's like, well, and we don't have the money to constantly revise the polygons. And it's like, what we're really saying is the whole shoreline is potential habitat, you know, for these kind of species.
We need to change the title or an existing
team. Potential. And you know, they're dying to have these areas contract when they're going through development permits. They're just constantly saying, well, aren't these contracted areas? Are these really the current situation? I said, how do you respond? It makes sense to them. And it's
to be the devil's advocate, I mean, are we going to speculate on stuff we don't know, or are we just going off the plug and out?
Oh, yeah. Are they going to pull us into
it's called the existing ecosystem report?
Good point.
What do you think?
But we're looking at habitat. And so, if you're going to manage habitat, you know that there are running costs, which you have to take into account. It's for wetlands, for instance. In the Perch Bay area, the coast that would take areas to be ecology different. Areas that should be protected because they could function.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's restoration areas that, and the areas that don't need to be fired off. There's too much conflict with the group positions. So it's kind of in three different categories where you want to do that restoration or protection. It's sort of the same thing. Wildlife is kind of messy.
I would suggest that it really depends on what the goal of all this is. You know, you ought to define what the existing conditions are. But the goal is to maintain the existing conditions, then fine. But if we've got a whole list of species at risk, species of concern, that whose goal is to increase them, so to remove them from those lists, then the goal is going to be to improve the capacity, connectivity, or whatever it is that you want, improve the extent. So we can basically establish existing, but the goal is going to be improved upon the wildlife problem. And that's where we start getting into potential and the areas that used to be used there are now. And that's where
the same policy discussion with salmon. We've got a lot less salmon than we used to, so we're going to just accept this, and what we've got now is all we're going to ever have. Where we say, you know, we're actually improving now for that. Instance. Projects would get you bring it back to it. Not historical markets, you can all River and Southport. We just bring it back so we have something left.
So that's the crux of what this report really has to accomplish in a way. If Whatcom County is really going to be proactive on this. I mean, in every one of these reports I've seen elsewhere, the same thing is things are getting worse, so we've got smaller areas and polygons. You know, there's this artifact that GIS is like this, I don't know what it is, like a holy mana that if a polygon doesn't show it, then don't worry about it. And that happens every day over the county counters. And then you end up with projects that are now stuck, they're there forever, and you're now having to move away. And just like John's saying, we're just either constantly walking backwards or we're trying to push forward. And I guess if we can't figure out what that goal is, really, it makes it harder for us to understand this.
I mean, what kind of the guiding ordinance, you know, advise planning staff, kind of counsel the value of wildlife habitat management with the goal of integrating wildlife management and protection in the process. So,
there's a lot of ways you can do that.
Right, it's pretty open. Not saying how you're managing them, you're just managing them.
With the goal of integrating wildlife management, whatever that management might be, and protection of what's left in the county planning process could be the way it's read.
See, when I went through the environmental section of the comp plan, I just saw language like that. But, you know, that's a wide open field to identify and describe. So it's much better to use a real life specific approaches. A lot of that's already been done.
This is the type of language that's allowing us to constantly step back and say we're losing more and more and more, and that's the problem. None of the Growth Management Act policies really are stemming the tide of loss.
Objectives of things like the parks plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the language is actually going to be used.
Right.
Okay, we're going to go through this, we're going to go more.
Right.
We're going to have to cost us more, but the value is whatever it is.
How do you guys do? I mean, you guys are the agencies that have to deal with this stuff all the time, I'm sure, and it's just like.
Yeah.
How is that response done? I mean, the Growth Management Act is
coming around.
I mean, from a regulatory standpoint, it's trying to hold the line.
Right.
You know, it's using the information that's available to us to make sure that there's not continued degradation. And in areas where we see an opportunity to enhance something,
mm-hmm.
then we kind of go down that route. You know, I deal specifically with fish streams. I mean, that's my that's my wheelhouse. But the county does a lot through their critical areas code.
Just to protect them or to?
Yeah, to protect and to offset. But right. also there's language in the code that allows for reasonable use.
Right.
You own a piece of property and it's all wetland. The code basically says that you have the right to reasonable use on that piece of property, and it doesn't mean you can't build on that property, but it means that you can build, but you kind of have to maybe not get everything you want, but you'll still be able to do something with that property. And so there's the opportunity to offset or mitigate or enhance different areas.
Or design
so it does. So it's as least impactful as possible. So it is really this marrying between, I guess, all out, you know, environmental protection and allowing development to move forward and trying to be that middle ground, which
Yeah, we know that middle ground is causing continual degradation of those on the lawn. I mean,
well, if you if the code the way the code is written for essentially no net loss.
Right.
I mean that's the way it's kind of presented.
Yeah. So if you cut a tree down here, you got to plant one over here,
essentially
kind of
deal.
Or on square footage, or on function and values of the impacted habitat. Right. Now we all kind of know that constructed wetlands don't really function the same way as naturally created wetlands. So there's an issue there.
Let me just split some of the functions out. So let's say these are instances of the flash flood problems and wetlands protected.
Right.
You can design something to take care of that site.
Yeah.
And keep the height of the wetland. The rain source is so. So, might be able to do that with like a rain garden. Further downstream, but then the answer to the question.
But one of the questions is, was the growth management act been around for 30 years now or something like that, isn't it? Have we held things that have been
26.
So have we held? Has there been significant?
But would it have been worse if we didn't have those regulations?
Yeah.
So it does require people to think and essentially prove their work and go through the process of how they can reduce and avoid these impacts to critical areas, habitats. That doesn't mean that they're not going to be impacted, but they have to show that they've tried, worked to the best they can, feasibility, avoiding and reducing those impacts and replacing them in some manner.
But even when you have all those things, 10% of people ignore them anyway. They'll do the leg, or they'll go too fast, or they'll do the school zone. So they still always going to have
Take this.
John was going to admit, did you have one more comment? Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
I'm going to let Ryan introduce yourself, and maybe you have your own comments, but I was also going to ask if maybe you could give the committee a rundown on when a permit application comes to the county, how you guys review it for wildlife habitat considerations.
Yeah.
What's the fastest one you've been
I turned somebody away. I'm Ryan Erickson. I'm the Natural Resource Supervisor for Planning and Development Services. So I oversee the permit of the critical areas review for all permits within Whatcom County. And one of you guys were wondering how can we use this. Our code is pretty specific for wetlands on identifying what they are, how to use the farm manual resupplement, what our buffers are, what our mitigation ratios are, and how we mitigate for those. What it's really not very specific on is habitat conservation areas outside of streams. And so we fall purely on the management recommendations from WDFW. And so if there are no management recommendations for specific habitat or species, then it kind of it gets ignored, basically. From when I heard about this project,
from an existing condition standpoint, it would be identifying, you know, patch sizes, which ones are highly functioning, even though they're isolated, or low functioning, where we could actually permit development. But then where should we put that mitigation that would give us the most ecological lift across the watershed? Because right now, it is you destroy something on your property, we make you put it back on your property, where it may be better to have a program where we put it into another spot in the watershed that needs it more in a more functioning habitat patch. Because we don't really have real habitats across Whatcom County anymore, except for in our, like, Chuck and that Lookout Mountain areas. The rest of it's all isolated patches throughout the landscape. And so how do we best manage as a whole all of our habitats to create good functioning ecosystems in certain areas and then let them go in other areas?
That's for sure the case.
And then for a healthy amount of forage fish, we do look at grain size when we permit on the shoreline. So even though it's not mapped as identified presence from fish and wildlife, we still look at grain size. And if it is within the forage fish windows, we would require a forage fish service for the permit.
So if you do a forage fish survey, what kind of eggs?
Yep.
Because, like, you put your dock in.
You can put your dock in there, and then you have to utilize the BMPs for spacing of your pilings, go to a single piling instead of a dual piling setup, minimize the footprint as much as possible for the disturbance of the areas. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. And then, but you're allowed to put it in there. And even if you do find forage fish and you just find casings, or you find the majority of casings, you would consider that spawning is almost done. You may give them a 2-day, don't work for the next 2 days, and you let them work. So it's just during the time that they're spawning that they really are protected.
So, can you know more of your background? Brian, I
I was an environmental consultant in California until 2005, ranging everything from marine habitat assessment studies to kelp and eelgrass restoration projects, as well as stormwater and upland work and remediation projects. And then I got to Washington State, worked for SAIC, doing dredge projects, and then I decided to get my master's. And then I worked for the city of Groombridge Island as a shoreline planner and water resources for 7 years. And I had a short stint with FutureWise for a year, and then now I'm a supervisor for Whatcom County.
What's your master's?
Master is in natural resource management and climate policy. Here? August, so 6 months.
Oh, 6 months.
Yeah. So I'm redoing a lot of the moving procedures right now and how moving will require.
Can you walk through that a little bit? Just because I think there's a number of us here that aren't familiar with that.
We have, basically, there's potential for critical areas review for any permit that comes in and across the counter. If it's a single county residence, if it's a building permit only and not a current planning, like a conditional use permit, short plat, long plat, administrative review, it goes into what's called a CA case, a critical areas case, natural resource review. The person brings that in at the counter, and then the counter pulls up a GIS, and then they do an assessment of, is there enough information at my fingertips to determine that there's no further critical area review, or there are six or five criteria in the code that allows us to waive it. So if there's already been critical review on the parcel and the permit is still active, then we can waive it. If they determine at the counter, this is our, what we call the pre-screen checklist, if that determines that they don't have enough information, then we require an NR assessment. And based upon the information, we can either ask them to submit just their application, or we ask them to submit the application with reconnaissance, or if we can really tell that there's a potential wetland there, assuming it's wetlands or streams, we'll require the actual delineation to be submitted with the application. And the tools that we use for that is we turn on the NWI layer and just scan it, because if it's in the vicinity, we know that it may be a wetland on the parcel.
The National Wetland Inventory.
And then with that, NOAA has, they also did a model and we have co-mingled together our wetland layer. And then we pull up the soil layer and we look at hydric, non-hydric, as well as I look at the hydric groupings, which is based upon infiltration rate of the categories A and B. Good potential, there won't be well in there. And further down, you can see more selfies and the layers of octars in your view. So, anyways, we use that information at the counter to determine what you're going to go forward. And we look at the fish layer and the pH layer as well to determine if those are in the area. And then, if they are in the area, then we require the critical areas report by a biologist to discuss. There are any potential impacts, but again, if there's no management recommendations on fish and wildlife, on flapper size, or on potential closing of seasonality, as you mentioned, parks, they'll discuss with parks that part of their parks may have to be closed during certain breeding seasons moving forward, and you have to do some better trail management. That all comes from WFW.
So do you use real photography?
We do use the pictometry a lot to look at what habitat is there. We do a site visit for basically every single permit that's equipped to the counter. We will go up on site and do a site visit. I am working on data sheets for the site visit so that we actually record what we see in the year. So when the applicant calls me 2 years later, oh yeah, I had somebody go out and know what they saw, something in the file. I have no idea what they saw. So we're kind of doing better tracking, but when it comes to, we're getting retrained on the Oregon Spotted Frog Fair coming up, but everything else is basically based off of GIS. And I will let you know my personal belief on GIS, which stands for Get It Surveyed. So, I don't trust it, and I have a minor in GIS and I'm pretty sure it's
a valuable tool, it doesn't know if
it's a valuable screening tool. It's a good start. Nothing needs it on the doorstep.
When you have positive hits on an applications consultant's review, does that get transferred onto your GIS?
So that is something that we're working on with interns from Western as we speak. We're getting all the delineation mitigation cases and critical reports scanned in and attached by parcel level. And then they'll be going back and they're going to digitize in the last 10 years of delineations for wetlands. Mm-hmm. So we will have an internal only wetland layer that won't be available for the public without a proper public records system.
Not species sightings, frog sightings, or anything like that.
We would be able to make those available to agencies who would like them. Obviously, if I'm certified to do forest for survey, so if I do a forest for survey for Whatcom County, I obviously will submit WW with my sample as I'm required by protocol.
But you couldn't take data from an applicant's files from their consultants and put that into your database for.
We are not at this time.
Okay.
Doing
just
like
the
that.
Lands.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't. That's why we're behind. It's
a really good thing to do, though.
Yeah.
We're almost caught up. I think we're like a week to 2 weeks out. Still saying 4 weeks in the county. But it's 4 weeks to get to not necessarily issue all the time. So yeah, it's very difficult. But yeah, site visit, and again, on the site visits, we rely heavily on the consultant's report. So we're just verifying what the consultant's report says, and then the thing that we notice in the field is that's different or off. We also do code enforcement cases as well.
So does that get recorded on the GIS layer when you do
the
a code?
Enforcement cases?
Yeah.
We don't record any of our permits or our enforcement by GIS. Our permit tracking system is not linked to the GIS.
Okay.
Secondary process.
Yeah,
it's an electronic file. You'll have your digital photos, you'll have the application, the consultant's report, and the really good critical layer planner, you'll have all the emails uploaded into the electronic file as well, but it's not necessarily, and then I'll put them in the field list electronically. We have one GIS person for the entire PDS. So when you ask me if we're maintaining GIS in there, no, not right now, but we will in the future. The new tracking system, the new permit system will need GIS links. And so that'll be very, very helpful with that. But we could definitely, with those field data sheets, note down when we see things and we can track things a little better, but we're not really managing our habitat through the permitting process, because that's not what the clearing process is for. Managing habitat usually falls into a long-range role. So,
if you even know that this parcel has got a report,
right now, when I got here, we didn't even have that. They're all in files. So the last 6 months, I know Wayne started before I got here scanning everything. So in the past years, the first time walking the county, they even started to attach their delineations to a parcel number.
Mm-hmm. Talk about a lot of data going. I mean, it's great that you're pulling it together. That's tremendous.
Yeah, it'll take me some time to do it. But yeah, usually like when you're doing all of your what you guys are doing, would be in a long range category, then we turn those into regulation, and they would fall into that category. But if there's no regulation, I can't require it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's in the comp plan. Because usually, if there's a regulation that hints to it, I have to follow the development regulation. So if there's no regulation, then the comp plan fails. But if there is a regulation, then the comp plan is just a nice talk. That's why you got to marry the two. It's highly important.
So we need that narrative text to tie to make that comment. Mm-hmm. Right there.
So every change in the comp plan is happening right now. After it gets approved, we need to follow up with an ordinance to change our development regulations to match the comp plan. Otherwise, again, it's just a nice talk.
So is that essentially what was meant by existing in the planning process?
So yeah, so that, you know, if things were, yeah, to include your recommendations in, we're going to have to either adjust. First, you have to amend the comp plan, and then we have to amend the development regulation. Unless there's a comp plan generic enough, like protect all wildlife, then you can use that as your justification to change your development regulations without having to adjust the comp plan. And also, I've noticed in this county that our comp plan has a lot of regulations in it. It's a lot of shalls and procedures. You're usually in your development regulation. And there are plenty of court cases that state that the comp plan doesn't rule unless there's absolutely no clear silence on your code. There's even 3670A of the GMA, and there's a specific regulation and specific statutory law in there that states that unless your comp plan is silent, or your builder's plan is good, but it's actually in state law. So.
I'm right here if there's another question.
Yeah.
Cool, thank you. Well, he's going to ask one question.
Thank goodness you're up here. It's great to have somebody your skills coming in now to work on these. I wonder how many counties are like that.
Yeah, I think five.
Yeah, that looks great.
Curious, though, I guess one question I had just in the general habitat realm. So I guess one of our, actually that's the question, is one of our habitat conservation areas the actual Chuckanut Wildlife Forest?
Yeah, it's an area of the
habitat forest. So does anyone here know where the Chuckanut Wildlife Corridor came from, or where, what sort of document first identified it? I tried connecting with our GIS person before the meeting and couldn't get hold of her.
First identified it.
I mean, you know, based on that report you shared, John, the Cascades, the Chuckanut, you know, identifies it as the last kind of contiguous forested section that actually connects the sea to the inland mountains.
Yeah, but that was known. That report was just to quantify and to assess what's there and what opportunities and risks are there. That was responding to what people are doing.
So who was the first one that called it that?
Yeah, I mean, part of this is I've emailed Tanner earlier this week to try to figure out like which wildlife actually use that corridor. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like there's not a lot of especially mammals that are using it for migration purposes.
Well, not across I-5, but that's not to say from I-5. They can't get to the marine, right?
There's a lot of
validation.
There is a lot of
Very baddies. Fish and amphibians.
I have a good friend who works for the National Park who steps back. He's seen
I have two.
Cool.
Yeah, right off of I-5.
Really?
Thick one night.
Oh
just,
my God, that's huge.
It was just like flocks of birds, yeah.
Flocks of birds.
Bats.
Oh, bats.
Bat birds.
Oh.
Bat birds.
Yeah, it was really impressive.
I should make a PHS. We use PHS, SalmonScape, and the WWF Forest Dictionary.
The forest fish layer is, who houses that?
The WWF. We just Googled the forest fish maps. It's the first one.
Okay.
I guess it's from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The, what does it take to be classified as a biodiversity area and corridor? I guess a part of me is trying to get my head around.
Google that.
They have a definition in there based on
the large
structure.
Area
utilized
by species.
I think it has some vegetation structure in there too. In fact, it, I wonder if it
here. If we get our term straight in this document, it's going to help.
If you find one, and right click on that. Or go,
well, this is the description here. So.
That's the record. You want to go over to the left? That. Oh, no, never mind. I thought that also showed the definition.
That was
at the bottom of
great
that.
Point of just clarifying the terms that are used. So.
Management recommendations might show it up on there as well.
Large patch size of your field, it's a certain size in the area that it drops off.
That's what I thought too, even just while we were sitting here talking.
Yeah, it's there's a definition. There's also an urban biodiversity area that's different from it, which does not seem to be in Ann's original habitat description.
Well, that doesn't help the county staff if it's not fairly defined either, I would assume.
It's
well,
a minor on the PHS.
It's in the PHS manual. But it's not in. No.
So, how do you address those areas at a county level then? I mean, just say.
We click on the management recommendation.
Okay.
For instance, a good one is shorebird. So areas of the significant shorebird congregation, whatever that's called, waterfowl.
Right.
if you click on the management recommendations from Fish and Wildlife, you're going to see, I think, 5 or 6 species listed. But as we all know, there's a lot more waterfowl than 5 or 6 species in the Puget Sound area that congregate in those areas, but only 6% actually have management recommendations.
So maybe a recommendation to revise those?
There's one on
Birch
Bay.
There
should be one. Yeah, that's the big. But those are little embedded recommendations that if they're putting them in use, it would be nice to have some comments saying that we would go, maybe not us, but we would recommend that they go through case by case and see if Fish and Wildlife has updated those recommendations or if they're accurate or they're.
It's a big volume.
Yeah, if it goes to the PHS, it takes forever to download it.
And you incorporate those recommendations into the findings or the.
Well, for instance, with the AstroTurf that's going in next door.
Right.
It's a waterfowl concentration area, so we're asking
Shorebird.
Shorebird.
Right.
We're asking Shorebird. Wildlife for a direction.
Did I give you the direction of that?
Are they lighting the fields too?
Oh, yeah, they're lighting the fields, but they're with these new directional lighting systems.
The field of luminaires.
There's no, light noise behind the light. They didn't do it for environmental reasons, well, for protected species use. They did it because they didn't want to upset the neighbors in the local
one. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It falls under there on the EIS. Yeah.
Okay.
But it didn't load down.
But you know the recommendations are not appropriate always or very complete.
Right.
So that's one of the things we could recommend to go through. I don't know how we could. I mean, that's in the county's database or state's?
The state has
a database. So in our THS documents, there are different chapters, different files for.
Recommendations
on how to treat individual species.
Okay.
And basically what they need to survive and to flourish. And then it's on the county to take those suggestions and determine how to apply them.
Okay.
It's not something that we've regulated at all.
Right.
It's on the county to kind of work its way through.
So what would be a reasonable recommendation from this committee then to have the county use your recommendations as a skeleton and then tailor them for the specific areas within the county. And down the road, they need to add to those recommendations is basically what you're saying is.
Yeah, you will find the CA update as written out of the workgroups. There's a little small sentence added in the HCA section that says that county can determine their own budgets off the transmission areas. So we can.
But if they don't match,
code, I can actually create a recommendation.
Okay,
you can.
Good. Yeah.
Is that going to be acceptable? Or are you going to be dragged into court on every single?
We'll still rely on Fish and Wildlife for everything. If it isn't there, then we get to make a determination. Currently, if it isn't there, then we don't do anything.
And in most cases, there isn't a buffer. For most of those, it might have recommendations on how to manage land around it, like ciliated woodpecker, how much canopy cover to remove in it or remain in an area. Habitat features to keep there, but it doesn't tell you how far away you should stay from an area. And
yeah, I think the documents were very carefully put together not to say this is what you have to do to protect the species.
Right.
It just says that this is the habitat that they flourish in, and this is what they need to be productive. So then you take that information and.
But the county's robust enough that they're going to stick their neck out and say, here's our buffer idea on this.
Then we would, our management recommendations, so we'll be conditioning our permits such to recognize the fact that there is some habitat there, and they may have have to not put an extension building within, like a permanent no-go buffer.
Right.
Be more like a mansion, eventually a mansion area, because of those two buffer by traditional standards.
Are you needing us to put recommendations?
That would be awesome. That's why I'm here.
Okay. You would actually like recommendations for that?
Yes.
Okay.
As long as they're justified by the review.
Right. That's always easy to do.
Not easy. Yeah.
Consultants.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be just something we had to review manager recommendations. Our corridors and areas that we currently have good habitat.
Okay.
And also, you guys know, we have no tree retention requirements in Whatcom County.
Given the wind?
No tree retention.
Outside critical areas, there's no canopy retention requirements in Whatcom County. Except for in Lake Temple, Washington.
And no stream side.
The stream we have, there are buffers that are based off of the
50 for natural streams, 100 for fish bearing streams, 150 for shorelines.
Okay.
And when's your guys' new literature coming out for stream buffers?
A couple months. And I've tried to get them to tell me what they're going to put in there, and I'm not sure. So I think it's going to be controversial.
Yeah,
that's my take on that.
Yeah.
Is that they're really getting to kind of a finalized point before they let anyone see it.
Controversial in what direction?
Probably in the protection direction.
And when do you think those will be coming out?
A couple months.
So they want to push that done. For the announcement.
That's right. They want to have their document and have all their citations and have all of their science listed behind their recommendation before they release that. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
I'm inside the department. They want to be sure.
Sorry. Can't listen to the door.
Yeah.
Right. No.
I like
it. To make sure that they're not.
So when our recommendations.
At the same point, they're just going to be recommendations.
Right.
They're not going to be.
Yeah,
Whether
that's
county or city or whoever.
So is it a burden on this committee to, it sounds like it is, to come up with those recommendations?
Well,
I mean, not recommendations, but the distances that we'd like to see codified.
Yeah, outside of the CAO process, which has already been done, if the recommendations come out, probably this committee would look for another change to do that.
Okay, we do need 5 years.
5 years? Yeah.
Unless, I mean, with the CAO, so the comp plan, you're codified of being there every 7 to 8 years. With the CAO, it's a development ordinance, so at any time you can adjust your CAOs. You don't have to wait for a comp plan update to change your particular ordinance. A lot of people forget that.
But you got to get it approved.
Yeah, you have to do a major update every so often.
The CO, you're mandated to do it with your comp plan update, but you can do iterations.
You can do minor updates.
You can do minor updates in between. And it's just a simple way. So you just write the language and just order it together and walk them through the process.
Right.
You don't have to have new public participation.
But with this, with the results out of this committee, that would streamline that for you.
Your recommendation, and with our code writing, then it should feel a lot simpler.
Got a big burden on our backs now.
Yeah.
That's good.
It gives us a little more like specific direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does.
That definitely kind of clarifies things on that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any more questions for Ian? Or all the good news is just overwhelming. It's just right to figure out how to do it.
I mean,
there's
that conservation
mature
fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that habitat.
mature forest.
Because that adds a buffer, you might want characteristics.
Well, if you have affiliated woodpeckers excavating cavities every year, you're going to have all kinds of den nest sites for all kinds of other species. Even with the yak, you have an association all over.
Well, you could possibly tie a Pili woodpecker with mature forest for that kind of pairing and making those a higher priority protection versus Pili woodpecker that we're finding in young deciduous forest. That might be a lower risk kind of area to have impact on.
Maybe preservation for restoration.
Right. Ag field all gone, right? Yeah. Except the telephone pole. But, yeah. Yeah, tying them. And I think you mentioned early on, one of the things that would help you a lot is the prioritization of habitats and identifying areas, kind of thinking habitat master plans in the city of Bellingham. Identifying those areas that are functioning well, the lower functioning, and then those areas that have potential lift for areas that could be used for mitigation offset, and coming up with a strategy that's a huge project. But,
yeah. We had some literature review to do too.
Yeah, that's the point. You're saying this is what should happen.
Yeah.
Given the saturation of the regulation.
Sorry?
The Bellingham focus on habitat restoration.
Mm-hmm. That was its kind of funding mechanism and goal, but it was intended kind of in the background to extend beyond that.
And when was that updated, or when was that?
Well, it just got completed like a couple of months ago.
I'm just trying to think where we can get our hands on other literature. Okay.
And then there's also the 2009 Fish and Wildlife Biodiversity and Urban Landscape
Initiative.
Well,
me too.
I was just looking at that one, so I'll forward that on because I printed up one sheet of that. But if you look at that, this is kind of looking at subdivision planning and looking at all the different data sets that it's asking to review. Pretty wild.
So I used the WW model to ground truth Bellingham's habitat management plan, and the polygons almost lined up. So that's great. There we go. That's Greenlink. I don't know where it's at right now, but that is a visualizing project. So it ended up being very almost identical. There's small tweaks in pack size areas, but it's pretty much so for a really inexpensive free model from Fish and Wildlife, which so I think got out of the consultant
driven. Right. Long torturous process.
How aggressive are your opposition to any changes in buffers? I mean, is it enormous in the county? I haven't followed the county lately.
You're saying the B word.
The B word.
Well, I'll just let you know, in the last 2-3 months, we've permitted probably three clear cuts for ag. And had there been larger habitat buffers on it, there would have been significant loss of production of berries on that those properties.
Clear cuts and conversion.
Legal land conversion, class 4.
The quality of our, there's a strong opposition, just from my own experience as an expert witness, and our buffer data has to be, our recommendations, we have to find primary literature that supports those recommendations substantially. And that's, it takes a lot of work to do to find stuff coming out. I mean, we can pick up all the stuff that's been picked up like in Bellingham and other places, but still, there is still literature coming out all the time on that, and it's varies.
Years,
I know. That's why I say it's going to take us 5 years to complete this part of the project, because immediately that's going to be challenged. And so anyway. Okay, on the shorelines plan. And that was 20 years, 10, 15 years ago? 10 years. I know it's
7 years.
Yeah.
Chris, and so you need a balance from the literature that you review with, which also comes out of the ag community, as well as looking at ag impacts versus other impacts.
Right. No.
Areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you describe the green link?
I don't want to hide, Chris. Did you have an agenda?
Why didn't I?
Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. We were kind of just trying to get our head around kind of habitat, you know, what habitat type we have versus kind of habitat conservation areas. So it's okay. I mean, we're still pretty preliminary, so it's a lot of good information.
I could ask if I can give like a huge presentation on green infrastructure. But basically, the Green Link's idea, Bellingham had already kind of started it with their habitat master, who didn't know at the time we got the grant that was going on. But basically, it is looking at your existing habitat patches, prioritizing them, and integrating your stormwater management and recreation with your habitat wildlife folders.
Right.
And categorizing them for functionality between five binning seems to be 3 to 5 binning is what everybody tends to use, so that's why stuff like that. We're kind of marrying different ideas from like the Columbia Coastal program, or the River Atlas program, with the program through W, what they're doing at ESA, as well as with the statewide human family work on the watershed level. We kind of tied all that into one location analysis. I wind up that if you synthesize it all down, it all comes out to about the same. So without having site-specific surveys, we're all using the same data, basically, is what my conclusion was. Use the same data, you'll get the same results, no matter what model you use.
Yeah, exactly. That's always the problem.
But the underlying data isn't necessarily all that great.
That's the problem we have. That's why what we're going to do with the GreenLink project, which before I left Futurewise, was we were going to actually do on-the-ground surveys and do timber cruises and really identify what was happening in the forest and what species we saw and do some transects and get some good data, underlying data with Western students.
And did that was for up here?
Yeah.
That was for in Bellingham?
Yeah, we're going to do it for Bellingham. We were going to do it. I don't know. I left. I don't know what happened to the ground truthing exercise.
Do you know, John?
I don't know the Green Links, but that was the same recommendation that came out of the Habitat Master Plan process, that similar project that the city was funding. And they basically, the underlying data was missing a lot of detail, and it really required boots on the ground. I don't know. I have to ask Annalise now that she's in charge of all that. Well, she's having beer with me at 4:30. Join us at the office.
All right.
And she's with the Minnesota.
No, she's now the natural resources manager for
Bellingham. Okay.
Yeah.
So all this green infrastructure, green link process stems from the East Coast, which did a lot for managing their state resource management. And they've done a lot of it in the urban areas as well, New York, Virginia, Alabama, Florida. And it's the whole idea of you get your areas that are so degraded, that's where you try and pump development. It's the GMA district act.
Right.
And then you figure out what your transition zones are, and then you figure out your areas that are highly protected. Those areas that are highly protected may be good ag lands, or they may be commercial or forestry areas. And so you want to help trade off where development is, and the build pressures from the areas of high value and the other areas. Just kind of George Boggs in the conservation district did a whole training session out wants to get down to is what do we need to protect and what do we, can we determine can be removed from the landscape and where do we put that function back where it gets in those bank courts, but it may not be back on that ag bank.
That's another recommendation, too, that we could make, I mean, and down the road. You can always have recommendations for the future with funds come available.
George Buck almost had that had a, this process funded in the CD. So they're an advocate for you guys to do green infrastructure going for that route.
And George Boggs was with Bellingham? Or
no, he's the conservation district.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
So he's hot on that. Would like to see smart buffers instead of big young buffers.
Right, I agree.
So much of the egg is so important to the plot. No bees in front of this one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Or if there's
God. Yeah, right.
Wow, got a lot of stuff on there. I mean, it's just amazing the complexity of the site. I mean, it makes sense for the quality of the landscape that we're working on. The shore and the mountain, all the way to the mountains, it's just hard.
A lot going on, yeah.
I guess mm-hmm.
You gotta start
moving forward as far as our next step for this project.
Well, so I've been thinking about it. You know, think about multiple objectives here, the farmland preservation part, and the different areas is also used as a impact for wildlife. That means that farmland needs to be more
That's what they're doing in the county.
So, that's what it's decided as farmland.
It sounds like Ryan's saying that whatever we come up with, we need to site thoroughly, right, to the primary literature.
Yeah. If you want to make it so it doesn't get tied down to litigation, is you've got to grab the science, because that's what's going to hold up in court. And that's the only thing that's going to hold up in court.
It happened in court anyway. At least assume you're going to go to court. That's
right.
What we did all the way through.
Yeah.
That's the answer we take when you get your permit. You weigh the legal action from both sides.
Yeah.
The applicant and the lawyer.
Okay.
Whew.
Well, I was just going to say that I'll start working on actually getting the distinct habitat types and the habitat conservation areas up into this report, and I'll upload that today before I leave. I guess I'm where it's at now. I guess if you guys have time to review that before our next meeting, great. If not, we'll
do what?
If you have time to actually review, so you know, based on where the report's at now, this would be section 2, the review of the inventory, which we're going to have is species and habitats. I'm just going to focus on the habitats for kind of the next digestible bit.
You could put a placeholder in for these oceanic habitats or deep water habitats.
I've got some notes,
okay.
So I'll put that in essentially once. Yeah, well, maybe we can just revisit this same topic at our next meeting and try to look at it in more detail. The other thing that we had on the agenda for today was reviewing the potential areas for landscape change. And I guess I don't actually want to do that. I emailed Stephen Freeland with Western Washington University just to see if there was any professors or students that were actually looking for a broad project and haven't gotten any response. I got a response from Stefan, but no response from the actual students or instructors
right.
Thus far.
But he suggested they'd be interested.
Well, I mean, the other option is if we actually secure funding to pay someone to do it or to help support a student project, that would be one thing, but without funding.
They won't work for free?
I mean, students will with,
Can we, is there sources of funding in the county or not? I mean,
I wouldn't say within the county. I mean, we could always, submit a request, but I guess we don't have any dedicated funding currently outside of...
Where else could it come from?
There's all sorts of grants, actually. I reached out, I can't remember what the name of the organization was. You got some funding for doing some of your opinion surveys from the... I just emailed the guy.
Wildlife Society?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because I know they give out small grants, but I already missed the application date for this year, so it'd be next to the project. But I guess so, I went back on to... So I guess Joel did some digging. This is where the high-resolution landscape analysis that the Department of Fish and Wildlife did. And you guys are welcome. I only printed out 4 copies, but whoever wants them can take them.
I already took a look at it.
You did?
They already have them broken up by sub-basins and have done kind of that study on change in impervious surface cover as well as canopy cover. And I believe they're in the process of updating that one more time based on 2013 satellite photos. Matt Muller is there. So I guess as far as maybe what we were hoping to get out of that, the Department of Fish and Wildlife is already kind of doing. It's not the scale or something. Specific target areas we've talked about previously, but...
Hey, in the worst case, this is great. I mean, it's regional, and it's certainly tied to the economy, and so we can kind of get an idea of what's...
So I think Planning Development Services typically hosts a booth at the intern fair at Western every December. So I think maybe we could... table our specific project for the time being and brainstorm on it a little bit, and if we want to actually get a dedicated intern for this come next year, if things continue, that's more likely.
I mean, if this is handy for us right now, it seems like it certainly is giving us
I think there's an intern fair coming up next week. Send you that information.
Yeah, I saw it, and I haven't. So essentially, we just hired or selected 3 interns, so we just have a new cash in, and I know that they're already focused on some of the projects Ryan mentioned and other things. I'll go check with my supervisor one more time to see if he wants one
more. To keep her, your temporary landscape change analysis, getting students to do it is. Stefan is obviously the first point of contact, but the key is getting the instructor, because you adopt it as a course project, so everyone in the course does it, or for some of the advanced courses, then you have individual student projects. And so it's a matter of basically getting the ear of that instructor. I can try talking to him, because it'd be spring quarter, see if it's a couple months out, if that would work. But what we're going to want is a clear definition of what
I guess you guys remember what we talked about before. I guess that project in and of itself was slightly outside of the bounds of what the ordinance was kind of directing us to do. So I guess if you guys had opinions on whether or not we should keep pursuing that as such.
Pursuing
the high resolution landscape analysis, so we had actually targeted smaller areas.
Whether we can substitute this data to replace that for the time being with the idea that down the road we can try to.
I think we've got enough to do now.
Seems like that.
Yeah.
Especially with this new stuff
to say the same thing, with the new information.
Stuff that Ryan's emphasizing, is trying to, it seems like we're having to, I can see it shifting over, trying to dig up the primary literature. And Say what?
You need your existing condition of baseline before you start.
It might be helpful to have kind of our definitions and our descriptions and kind of where we're at, and then once we go into If you want to go more specific, then we'll kind of know what we're working off of or what we're specifically looking for.
Sounds good. I would agree. I think let's use this data and keep working on the rest of the text. I mean, if the county's, you know, if we don't get the extension, what happens if we don't get the extensions? I guess we're going to get the extensions, right? Or there's no choice.
Never
stay positive. What's that, stay positive? Do they ever say, I mean, in the worst case, so we'll give them what we have right now, which isn't a lot. But I mean, yeah, it seems like we've got a lot on our plate.
Council typically appreciates the recommendations from the committee, so.
They're likely to.
Fairly likely not, certainly, I guess.
They're not paying
me.
No.
Yeah. I know. That's a good
point. We have our whole committee meeting next, would be the 19th. 2 weeks.
Yep.
It was intended to kind of get back together as well as review the Chapter 11 environment comp plan update. So I'll email that out to everyone again. I emailed it to everyone like a couple weeks ago. And we have to take some time to look at that. So I'll remind all the other committee members as well. When would you guys like to get back together?
Can you do March 4th? Or we have that.
We're doing every 2 weeks.
Yeah. That. I mean, I'm just so busy right now that it's hard to plug it in, but we could do it. No, closer to 2 weeks would be better, because we have that general meeting next week, right?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, right.
So, yeah.
Then 2 weeks after that.
It's the 4th.
Or is that right? It's 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that okay? There is. We really got it. And if we can, we've got to start reviewing the text.
Yeah, and I can start harassing you guys more regular and sending emails once a week just to provide more updates. In Dropbox, I'll keep a running list of all the files we have, so if any of you didn't download it and like to research it, just let me know and I can send you a link.
Is it possible just to bring in like a jump drive next time and just do it that way? Because the Dropbox takes so long.
Yeah. So you pick it up from Chris here?
Yeah.
For each of us to bring it, that would be great.
Yeah, just let me know what you need and I'll make sure I update that list as well. Okay, well, I'll plan on reserving this room from 1 to 3 again on March 4th.
Yeah. Sorry about the confusion, too, on that last thing. I think it was those old dates that just were still
in
the calendar.
I think I started that whole thing.
No, it was okay. It's always nice to know when one's been canceled. Yeah. It's not there.
Yeah. And if there's anything that will speed things up for you, Chris, if you just send emails out and give us jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll try to get all this text cut and paste in there today before I leave.
And that'd be great.
I'll upload that. And really just comments at this point. I mean, in theory, existing ecosystem report is what we're going to be working on. So just comments and ideas. This point's still pretty loose. We have that BAS format. I can't remember what it is right now, but I was already looking at that, and there's some areas that we don't really quite cover yet.
So we need to tailor on that.
So, yeah, just look.
Well, that's the big push, I think, is for us all to start individually reading those sections and start adding those comments so that the document has to grow at this point. We've got a lot of meetings and a lot of input in it. And I feel bad that I said I would do it last time, and I didn't get to it, and this time I will. I'll do it this next few days.
Your homework is to put in at least an hour on
Good.
If I get an hour out of all of you, that would be great.
Uh-huh.
Okay, should we adjourn?
Strive to do that.
We don't need a motion to adjourn, do we?
No.
Thanks,
everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.